720 WGN. Dave Plyer off tonight. So much, are you having a good time so far, man?
I'm having a really good time right now, man. I'm enjoying this a lot.
We're going on some deep rivers and creeks here. Well, even we're talking during the breaks, and we're just... The butterfly effect has come up a few times in our conversations.
Absolutely. We're talking about the end of the world to the founding of our country.
Yes. Like, we mentioned the butterfly effect, and David Shostakis joins us now, and he wrote Creating the Declaration of Independence, which is a great book, and we talked about this last year, too, but it's written in a way for a lot of people to understand, maybe that don't know a lot of the history. It's in I don't want to say simple text, but it's in text that people could understand.
Well, it's actually... in a story form,
yeah,
rather than a history. I mean, we start out with Richard Henry Lee, and we start out with him getting ready for the day and actually wind up, you remember Pongo, Dimitri?
Domiti.
Yes. See, I got my own problems.
Yeah.
But you find out that Richard Henry Lee's missing four of his fingers because they were blown off in a rifle accident.
Oh, my.
And he always wears a black satin glove to cover up the fact that... There's things in the book that make these people real.
Right.
There's things in the book that you learn a few things about City Tavern and the beer that Jefferson and Adams would drink, how much business. You know, people have business luncheons now, right?
Right.
And they would have business luncheons launch a country.
Yeah. Well, we talk about these names and how could they not be larger than life to us now? Of course, that's just the natural evolution of how we look back at our founding fathers or any of our presidents or what have you. But yeah, these were normal guys doing extraordinary things that got lucky a couple times along the way. So one way they got lucky was Thomas Jefferson penning quite a document. Where we left off is he's now he's part of a committee to write this thing. Adams has asked him to write it. And he accepts the task of writing it.
And when he accepts the task of writing it, he now has been tasked to do this essentially on his own. And he winds up locking himself in his second floor apartment at a place called Graff House. It was named after a bricklayer who built the house, Joseph Graff. Graff House is actually also burned down, but it's been rebuilt, so you can go and see the room, a recreation of the room where Thomas Jefferson wrote the Declaration of Independence. Speaking of which, he wrote the Declaration of Independence on a chair that he invented.
Oh, the swivel, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah,
when I hear about how these people invented these different things, I wonder what we'd be doing if not for Instagram. Like, would I be, like, creating a chair to sit in, like, finding new hobbies? Like, what are we doing with our lives right now? So he created this chair, and that was...
There was rollers on the windows. They have the windows go up and down. He took the rollers off of the windows, cut the seat of the chair off the seat, took the window rollers, put them under the seat of the chair so that he could swivel back and forth, look out the window, turn to his desk. As we're sitting here swiveling, Thomas Jefferson invented the first swivel chair in the entire world while he was writing the Declaration of Independence.
That's insane. That's insane. All right.
Now, so, that one might be folklore. I'm calling folklore.
No,
isn't true?
No, it absolutely.
Okay, because he had slaves. Was he physically the one cutting them? Or what? No. I don't know. He had some help.
He did have help. I don't doubt that for a moment.
That's good enough point.
He did have a personal slave with him.
Oh, yes. Did he?
Yeah, he did. And that's why.
In Philadelphia?
In Philadelphia.
I know we're veering off the beaten path, but you talked about Abigail in the break, but, you know, Jefferson, he was one who didn't believe in the institution of slavery. Am I correct in that? In long form, even though he had slaves and is rumored to have had a mistress, he had a complex relationship with it.
He had a complex relationship with slavery, and he was quite well aware that when he penned the words, "All men are created equal,"
that
slavery was inconsistent. With the that element of the Declaration of Independence. There was at least three times during the course of his life that he did some things, one of which was a proposal that turned out to be part of the Northwest Ordinance of 1787 that banned slavery forever in the Northwest Territories that ultimately would become Indiana, Ohio, Michigan, Illinois, and Minnesota. Mm. So Jefferson actually had this unusual relationship. He understood the inconsistencies. And sometime after 1787, the things that he had done to try and work out the extinguishment of slavery kind of fell by the wayside. Somebody asked me about that just a couple of days ago. Why did Jefferson go silent? And I said, hey, it would appear to me that had he not gone silent on the issue, he would likely never have been president.
Mm.
And so there was tremendous politics. There was all kinds of, and there was, a, you know, it was a legal institution, and people actually had mortgages on slaves, right? Mm. And so you were in a big financial mess, yeah, too, to try and untangle it. So it was much more complex than people think.
Right.
But Jefferson, one of Jefferson's proposals, and this is in fact in the book, for the Constitution of Virginia, was that there would no further introduction into the state of Virginia of new slaves, and slavery would eventually become extinct,
right,
as a result of no new slaves being introduced.
Would die with slavery, the slaves themselves.
And that was in fact his proposal for the Constitution of Virginia as far back as 1775.
Mm-hmm. So he's swiveling in his chair.
He's swiveling in his chair, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah, let's bring it back. He's swiveling,
just like I'm swiveling now.
It's a great conversation to have, and I'm glad we got into that because it is fascinating to that. The dichotomy between...
So as he swiveled, he wrote that line. Wait a minute, this chair was made. Okay. And then, so we passed that line. So then the next line.
Interestingly enough, the way complaints, civil complaints and legal documents start in many ways. One of the ways a document in those days would start would be whereas, right? There would be a whereas, then you'd make several statements. Problem is that whereas was basically the beginning of a royal proclamation.
Okay.
And what these guys are doing is getting rid of the king.
Right.
Right?
So they got to change it up.
They can't say whereas. And he spent some time mulling this over. And that's when we come up with when in the course of human events, as opposed to whereas. So the opening line was something that he labored over quite a bit. Because, like I said, we wanted to change it up from the whereas that was a royal proclamation, because the rest of the document's gone, we're getting rid of the king.
As he writes this document, and I imagine any writer, of course, takes ownership over what they write, I imagine as he presents it and he gives it to other people, they start to have some other opinions on words that could possibly change.
There were some. One of the most famous phrases, of course, is "We hold these truths to be self-evident." And Jefferson originally wrote, "We hold these truths to be sacred and undeniable," which just doesn't have quite the same panache.
The flow, yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't have the same flow as self-evident. Ben Franklin and John Adams were the only two of the rest of the committee that actually had any editing, Ben Franklin made only one change to the document, which is a pretty large compliment because Franklin was one of the premier writers and one of the prime editors,
right,
of and newspaper publishers of the day. And Franklin's change was from sacred and undeniable to self-evident.
Was he worried about the religious aspects of sacred and undeniable, or was it just the flow of it? That kind of screams like the pulpit a little bit.
It screams, I believe it was just the flow, because certainly he did not do anything about the law of nature and of nature's God.
True. Mm.
And the final paragraph where it talks to, where they look to divine providence for guidance. There's more than a few religious references through the course of the rest of the document. So I doubt that Franklin's change had anything to do with religion. It had to do with the flow of the document.
What about Adams? Did he make any contribution, big changes to the document, or did he?
There's a few scratches here and there. Where Adams more or less wound up being the one defending the document in the Continental Congress when they ultimately presented the document on July the 1st. Then the Congress went to work on it, and ultimately, strangely enough, it took them about 3 days. They made 85 edits and got rid of about 25%
of the document.
About 25% of it was cut out. One of which had to do with a reference to slavery, and Jefferson's efforts to pin the international slave trade on the king and indicate that they wanted to abolish the international slave trade, but the king would not allow that to happen. And that got cut out by the Continental Congress, primarily at the urging of South Carolina and Georgia. South Carolina and Georgia did not want to go along with that element of it, and so that got cut out, and along with another 25%. And Jefferson ultimately said that they emasculated his work, is how Jefferson was largely silent during the course of those 3 days while they were working on it.
I give them credit because I could not sit there and let them touch anything I had written.
No, you can't.
Jefferson was really, really good with pen and paper. He was not known for giving speeches. He was not known for competitive arguing or debate. He was not. He is said to have had a fairly soft voice, low spoken. And so Adams was the one that actually defended the document during the course of the debates and the editing process over the 3 days from the 1st of July till the 4th of July.
I want to go to a quick commercial break, and then we got to talk about July 2nd, 3rd, and 4th, because there's some interesting things about the day we celebrate Independence Day, and maybe it's not the day we should be celebrating Independence Day. More with David Shatokas after this here on 720 WGN.
Say you should write it. To your legal mind and brilliance we defer.
Is that so?
Well, what is this, Curtis?
This is a suggestion of Rogers. This is from the musical 1776.
Oh, from the musical 1776 that Roger and I were talking about earlier. Very on the nose there. We just mentioned the Chicago Lakefront, Chicago Summer Blast. We did the live read. Why, should we be celebrating Independence Day on July the 4th, David, in your opinion?
Well, not in John Adams' opinion.
Okay.
In John Adams' opinion, there was a course of things. Richard Henry Lee proposed independence June 7th. They put off a vote till July the 1st, and then they continued to debate a little bit more. And on July 2nd, they took a vote, and ultimately, on that day, a couple of interesting things happened on July the 2nd.
In Philadelphia.
In what we will now call Independence Hall, which was at the time also the Philadelphia State House.
Okay.
But a couple of interesting things happened that day. One of which is John Dickinson, who we related before that was tying up Pennsylvania, walked out of the time when they were voting. And while Dickinson walked out when they were voting on whether or not to vote for independence based on Lee's resolution, Ben Franklin cast the vote really quick for Pennsylvania.
Did he walk out on purpose? Was he morally object on his own sense that he didn't want to declare? He didn't want his name associated with it, or did he just go to the bathroom or something?
Right.
Like, that doesn't seem like a good time to go to the bathroom.
It was a bad idea if he was actually opposed to independence, but it really was kind of a walk in protest. But it seemed like everybody else was going to be going along. And so the vote turned out to be 12-0.
Missing one, aren't we?
We are missing one. New York.
Yeah.
New York. They abstained. New York abstained because it was very, very interesting. In those days, of course, these days we elect representatives, and representatives kind of go and vote what they think they should be voting.
Right.
But in the Congress in those days, the representatives actually got directions from home.
On what to do.
Gotcha.
And New York did not have direction on what to do on a vote for independence. And so New York abstained.
Wait, so legislators used to listen to the people who vote for them?
Yeah.
Amazing.
Get out of here.
Yeah. Yeah, curious concept,
that's
right?
Crazy talk.
On another day, we'll talk about the 17th Amendment.
Because there was back and forth. I mean, they wanted a unanimous vote, the supporters of independence, as much as possible.
Right.
So an abstention was at least not a down vote, so they felt like that was an okay solution for everybody.
Well, that
maybe
allowed
the only one they could do.
That allowed them, when they, at the heading of the Declaration of Independence, they were able to say the United States of America and Congress assembled issues this unanimous declaration.
Right. because it's 12-0.
Because right. It was 12-0.
So when this vote is happening, is it as dramatic as we see votes now? The health care bill vote last summer, so dramatic, where it's, is there someone, do they say the state's name? Do they go, what order, do you know what order they go in when they're casting the vote? Is it alphabetical? Is it north to south? Like, I'm just trying to put myself
right,
in that spin. Room, yeah. That moment.
During the break, you mentioned the musical 1776. Yeah. The musical 1776, although my major complaint with that is they make Richard Henry Lee look like a bit of a buffoon.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But beyond that, it's pretty accurate in terms of representing how the vote goes for independence. It in fact did go by state in alphabetical order.
Okay.
And the other circumstance about that is, though, is by the time they did cast the votes, they knew that.
Yes.
The drama wasn't the same as it was in the movie, that they were kind of waiting for.
Right.
They knew by the time the vote was counted that it was going to be the case.
So that's July 2nd.
That's July 2nd.
So why do we celebrate on the 4th?
And there's a famous letter from, you mentioned Abigail earlier, and one of the reasons we know so much about so many things is the correspondence between Abigail and John.
Adams.
John Adams. Abigail Adams and John Adams. And John wrote to Abigail on July the 2nd that July 2nd forevermore will be celebrated with fireworks and displays and parties and games across the country as a... in commemoration of the birth of the nation. And Adams predicted July 2nd would forever be known. However, they didn't finish the editing work on Jefferson's document for another couple days, and ultimately a fellow by the name of John Dunlap published the Declaration of Independence and what they call the Dunlap broadsheets on the 4th of July.
So they had to edit a few more things that they had already voted on. This sounds like the precursor to when Nancy Pelosi says, we'll read it after we vote.
Right.
That sounds like the first original one of these things. That then, of course, the Democrats pointed at the Republicans at. Anyways, we can
exactly.
go back and forth.
Right.
So they've been doing this for a while then there.
They've
yeah.
been doing this for a while, yes.
So they print it on the broadsheets. And then what happens actually on the 4th of July?
On the 4th of July, they walk out and read it in the public square. They send a few. They send copies to all the capitals of all the states around the country. And even though New York had not cast a vote, New York eventually came around. But New York had not cast a vote at that particular time. They sent copies to General Washington. General Washington called together the troops. Read the declaration out loud to the troops, so they it got published in the newspapers all around the country, and spread the word. And it's kind of interesting because Jefferson had a task set out where he had to talk to a whole lot of audiences. Among them, he had to talk to the foreign powers, because the foreign powers certainly would not get involved. If it was an internal British business,
mm-hmm.
but it's not an internal British business when there's an independent country, so he had to make that presentation to them. He had to make a presentation to the American people at large to garner their support. But mostly, he had to, as much as anything else, he had to put together something that people would die for. He had to put together something that people would die for. And so the audience of General Washington's army, plus their potential recruits, was really, really important in creating. He had to speak to these various audiences, including the king,
yeah.
Including the king and the British Parliament, and then the foreign governments. So the work that he did to do that was just incredible. What he crafted together to talk to all these audiences to motivate people to fight and die. You know, there's Article 6 of the Constitution makes everybody that holds a any kind of government position anywhere swear to take an oath to support the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact is nobody takes an oath. Nobody goes out and dies so that the president can serve 4 years,
mm-hmm.
so that the House of Representatives meets every 2 years, or tax bills originate in the House.
The words of the Constitution.
Yeah,
right.
So the Declaration is the inspiration, and the Constitution is the execution. Those I actually, because of I've been an elected official and admitted to practice law, etc., I've taken an oath 8 times to support the Constitution. That kind of drove me to try and understand what it was I was swearing to.
Right.
But the real thing that anybody swears to, the real thing that becomes the American creed, is 55 words. It starts with "We hold these truths to be self-evident," and ends up with "the consent of the governed." And what we should really, really memorize is not the preamble to the Constitution, but the American Creed and the Declaration of Independence.
It's like you were watching the clock coming up to the end of this segment, David Shostokas. The book is Creating the Declaration of Independence. Where can people find it? Where can people get more information?
Amazon.com is Creating the Declaration of Independence. Follow me on Twitter at Shostokas, S-H-E-S-T-O-K-A-S. Take a look at my website, Shostokas.com.
And we're going to have you on soon because you got another new book. We can't tease too much about it, but you're excited about this next
one. I'm excited about this. I'll just say Shane Bouvet.
Okay.
If people Google Shane Bouvet, they can see B-O-U-V-E-T, Shane Bouvet, and...
From a founding father to Shane, actually, the first book you wrote, the book you wrote about independence, Shane met President Trump and has a relationship with him.
Their ongoing friendship.
And it's going to be a story about that. It's a fascinating what you told me and teased earlier and stuff. So we'll
might want to follow him on Twitter.
Yeah, I was just going to say.
Shostokas on Twitter.
You might get to see a retweet at some point soon by someone who uses Twitter pretty well. David, actually, you use Twitter a lot. You're great on Twitter. But the man, one of the men you're writing about with President Trump and that relationship might be using Twitter even more than you do. So it'll be
more effectively at any rate.
John, can I ask a quick question? I know you got to break for news and get things going, but we played that little clip from 1776, and I've been listening to your guests talk about a lot of the processes, the history, the schedule of events of how all this came about. And I don't know if he's seen the musical 1776, but it's all in there. All of these specific events that happen on these certain days, the communiques with General Washington in the field, the four of officials getting together to get the thing written and to even decide about what the national bird would be.
Right.
And things like that. And so I'm just wondering how accurate that presentation, if he has seen it, is.
Well, Roger's asking. You can't hear him because you don't have the headphones on.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'll relay the rest. Okay. He mentioned the musical 1776. You've seen it.
Yes.
How accurate, because Roger mentioned that a lot of these dates and things are covered, what the bird will be, what are these things. How accurate did you find that, as much as an American, or as much as a musical could cover it?
As much as a musical could cover it, it was... pretty darn accurate. Like I said, my major complaint was they made Richard Henry Lee into a buffoon.
Yes.
That whole, when he's riding on the horse, falls off the horse, and, you know, absolutely, and that whole thing. Richard Henry Lee was a serious guy with serious business.
All right. All right, Roger, hope that answers your question.
Yeah, thank you very
much.
All right,
okay, it is 4:30. Do we got a new sponsor here? So 4:32, we're a little late, Roger, but that was fascinating and really great stuff, and we're going to toss it over to you in the newsroom with the news.